the Interesting Conversations with Interesting People podcast series with author Nigel Beckles.
Welcome to the podcast.
Please like the podcast and subscribe to this channel. Podcast. Thank you. The very best way to promote your podcasts. Podpage makes it easy to create a podcast website with just a few clicks. Every page is optimized to be found on Google and it stays up to date forever. For more information, visit podpage.com, the future of podcast promotion.
Have you experienced several failed relationships or been through a divorce? How can you avoid making the same mistakes again? How to avoid making the big relationship mistakes is out now.
Hi, my name is Nigel Beckles. My book is packed with practical and common sense strategies that you can use to make better relationship choices.
Now you can discover the dangerous myths about love. If your relationship expectations are realistic, why you could be falling in love for all the wrong reasons.
How to avoid making the big relationship mistakes. It's a book that could change your life.
Available from amazon.co.uk. Kindle version also available.
Author Queen P, When the Mood is Right, A Poetry Journey, Mood Swings, and When the Mood is Right, A Rebirth. Books available on Amazon and all good bookstores.
Hi, I'm Queen P. Please join me by tuning into my poetry podcast, The Royal Affair, on Spotify, Apple, and all other similar platforms. You can also listen to the podcast on the Helium Radio Network on Saturdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
You have entered into the Royal Affair.
Get ready for takeoff.
Welcome back to my Interesting Conversations with Interesting People podcast series. My very special guest for this episode is one of the survivors of the tragic New Cross fire back in January 1981, where 13 black teenagers lost their lives. He's also one of the directors of the New Cross Fire Foundation, Wayne Haynes. Hi, Wayne. Welcome to my podcast series. How are you?
Oh, hello, Nigel. I'm not too bad at the moment. I can't complain. The sun's shining.
So for listeners who are not familiar with the story regarding the New Cross fire on Sunday morning, 18th of January, 1981, sadly, 13 black youngsters aged between 14 and 22 died on that night, and one survivor committed suicide 2 years later. So you were there. Who invited you to the party?
I wasn't invited. And no, I wasn't a gatecrasher. I was actually the sound system at the DJ at the party. Belonged to me.
Okay.
So I was involved in the party from before the party, to be honest. The original party was set up for Yvonne for her 16th birthday. Yvonne and a couple of her friends, one of them being one of the directors of the charity, New Cross Fire Foundation charity, Patricia Walmington, they came to see me because I knew Yvonne, but me and Patricia were very good friends. So Patricia had told Yvonne, basically, you need to get Wayne, you need to get Gemini Sound playing at your party, and you know your party's going to be swinging. They came down to see me, and that's how I got involved.
So how old were you at the time?
16. Yeah, I know. What was I doing at 16 years old, being a sound system and playing out and all the rest of it? My family are all musical, so...
Some of us start young in terms of DJing. So when did you realise there was a problem on the night, and what were your thoughts and immediate reaction?
If I go back to the night and explain to you, like, party itself was swinging. It was a great night. The people had a great time. Any of the other 50-odd survivors that were there, you asked them, the party itself was great. The outcome of the night was a tragedy. So basically what happened is, we had gotten down to a part of the night, and I'd say it's probably around 5:20, 5:30 in the morning, and the party's like winding down now. And I always remember it, very, very poignant. Record playing at the time was a reggae song by the Wailing Souls called Kingdom Rise and Kingdom Fall. It's playing and people are partying, and all of a sudden I smelt something like smoke. But obviously, at that point, some people did smoke, but we were kids, so you couldn't be smoking in someone's house and all the rest of it. So it's not that. But back in those days, we used to string wires together and twist them together and put tape on it. So you never knew if something sort of like touched and caught fire. So I actually said to one of the other sound members, Steve Collins, Steve, you check behind the amp case, because he was like the engineer for the set. Art said to him, check behind the amp case to see, I can smell something. At that point, I said to him, I'm just going to go out and get a drink. So he proceeded, music still playing, he proceeded to go around behind the set and looking and whatever. And I went off downstairs because what had happened, the party was actually on the first floor. It wasn't on the ground floor, right? So I've gone down, come out the room and gone down, going down the stairs. Now, when you're going down the stairs, you come out of the room and they'd be right in front of you and you go down the stairs, turn right. If you was coming down, I'd turn right. There's a little landing and then you turn right again to go down to the ground floor. So I've gotten halfway down the final set of stairs. And if you look to your right, what you would see is the kitchen door. Throughout the night, the kitchen is where you went to get food and drink. There originally was a table there. And as you would come to the table, obviously that's where you'd get served from. Well, I've come halfway down the stairs, looked over the banister. There's no table. There's no adults that were all in that part before, which I believe to be the kitchen. There's nobody there. Before, it was packed with adults. Now, before the party even started, you were informed as you came through the door, you're not allowed in the front room. No kids were allowed in the front room, right? And that was an easy rule to uphold because I don't know if you remember, but I know you're old enough to remember, the doorman, the man who was holding the door to make sure you had an invitation, you were invited, was the wrestler, Johnny Quango. Big, big black guy, used to be on the TV and everything. So, you know, that was upheld properly. The kids weren't allowed in the front room. You were ushered in and ushered straight up the stairs. So, as I said now, back to where I was, I've come down the stairs. I've looked over the balcony, no adult. Start to continue coming down the stairs. And then I see like wisps of smoke. You know, it looks more like it was more than a cigarette smoke, but it wasn't like full-blown smoke. But I realized then that I'm looking in front of me now that the front door, which is right in front, which is straight ahead. If I look straight ahead, the front door would be straight ahead. It's wide open. I can see people outside, not really taking in who's outside. I can just see people outside. I can now see this wisp of smoke coming in from the right-hand side from the front room door and realize the front room door is ajar where it'd normally been closed throughout the night. At that point, I realized, there's a fire. The smoke started to come out more. And I don't know, instantly I turned around and ran back upstairs. I got back up the stairs to the room. And I don't know, people always ask me, why did you do this? And I have no idea why I'd done what happened next. I went in the room, I shouted fire. It was as though nobody really took much notice of me. Maybe it was just the music was too loud. I went and I slammed the room door closed and I shouted fire again. And from that point, it was like, hold on, what's going on? And all hell started to break loose. I remember going to Steve Collins again and telling Steve, before that point. So now all hell's breaking loose. People are beginning to panic and whatever not. Remember, but somebody else must have run through the fire because the fire must have got out the front room at that point. And I later found out that it was Mrs. Ruddock's oldest son who actually died in the fire, Paul Ruddock. He had run up now, kicked open the front room door, shouting fire. So now the whole panic really starts to ensue. People start running around. We can now smell the smoke properly. Before we could do anything, the fire was already coming up the stairs. Slammed back the door, and I remember I'd put my sheepskin coat behind the speaker box section that was in that corner by the door. And I went and I got my coat, and I put my coat down at the bottom of the door and got one of the guys, I believe it was Steve. I said to Steve, use something like the preamp there by the window, because we'd set up right in front of the window. Use the preamp to break the window. Just smash the window, get the window open so we can get out. At that point, it was like, you know what? Get the girls out first. All the men then helped the girls to get out. So we smashed the windows and people started jumping out. But it's getting hot in here now. I'm talking, it's getting real hot in here. Open the window, gone back and opened the door. The fire's right outside the door, slammed it back. At this point now, lights have gone out, music's gone poof, and it's a darkness. But I'll tell you what, it's the way I describe it all the time, and I'll never forget it as like this. Do you remember the old Laurel and Hardy movies, like where they'd be in, like under a strobe light?
Indeed.
And everything would be going in slow motion. And that was what those next set of minutes was like. Everything was dark and it's all everybody's screaming and shouting and people moving around in this room in slow motion. It's so hot now, I'm looking to get out. Now we're talking that people are panicked. People are pulling other people away from the windows. People are climbing over people to get out the window first. I've looked and I've said, sod this. And I've grabbed my coat that was at the door and I've put it on back to front. So I've stuck my arms in and put it on and stuck it over my head and run out the door through the fire. I remember running up the stairs because obviously there's so much fire coming up the stairs. We later on find out that the house had recently been painted and all the paint and the thinners was all underneath the stairs. So this, the front door being open and the paint and the thinners, that's fueling the fire. So this is what's helped the fire like get where it is so fast. So personally, what I've done, as I said, I've come out of the room and I've thought about it and I've just gone up the stairs, stumbling through the darkness and the fire and the smoke up the stairs. I'm having to pull the thing off of my head to try and see what's going on. Start following the smoke up the stairs. Now there's rooms upstairs. I've gone up there. I'm still following the smoke. There's a room at the front, but the smoke's going out the room at the back. I've gone following wherever that's going, I'm going. And I remember sort of like bumping into things and I bumped into what might have been a chest of drawers or something like that. And I remember stepping on things. I don't know whether they were people or whatever. Not. I'm just trying to get out. I got to the window, climbed out, felt around, felt the drain pipe. So when I've looked down, I've seen there's another guy going down the drain pipe in front of me. And I'll tell you what, as I've started climbing down the drain pipe, and I think my head must have got to where the windowsill was. And then another guy's got on the drain pipe. And then the drain pipe starts pulling away from the wall. You know, you can imagine you're holding onto this drain pipe and I'm falling backwards and I let go. And I've ended up falling through an outside toilet, through the roof of an outside toilet, smashed my hip into 130 odd pieces and ended up unconscious. I owe my life to the Most High, obviously, but I owe my life to a good, good friend of mine from then till now. His name's Robert McKenzie, because Robert was one of those that managed to get out and he was on the side watching people, his brother, all of our friends coming out. And he was the one. He was there at the end. And he said he ran down to my mum's because where the party was, I used to live not too far, 10 minutes away on the estate. And he ran down to my mum's house and knocked on the door. And my mum always says to me, he was at the door screaming, your son's dead, your son's dead. There's been a fire, he didn't get out. And because of that, my mum phoned a friend who actually jumped in his car, flew up to the house. And when he got there, the fire brigade were packing up. And he saw a fireman and he said to the fireman, please go and have another look. So happens it was the only black fireman working out of the local fire station at the time. And he went round the back and he found a young man named Basil Buchanan. He now lives in Jamaica. He was in the garden. He was the guy that got on the drain pipe behind me. But he didn't let go. He held on and ended up in the garden. And then the guy came back and found me in the outside toilet, unconscious. Hence why I'm here today.
So what other injuries did you suffer?
Oh, my brother, I got first-degree burns all from my fingertips to my shoulders. I've got nerve damage. I broke my tibia. I broke my fibula. My face was scorched. I used to look like a white guy. Before that, I was actually lighter than you are. After the whole fire thing, the Barbados High Commission, thank you very much, Barbados High Commission, actually paid for me to go to Barbados and spend time with my family for nearly 6 months, which was all part and parcel of my recuperation. But I spent 6 months in hospital after the fire. And I've been, to be honest, I've been disabled ever since. I've walked with a walking stick ever since.
Well, I was going to ask you, after the incident, how did it impact you personally and emotionally?
Nigel, there's so much to this story. There's so much I can tell you. But you see what? My life changed inexplicably. Because I used to be a baller as a kid. When I say baller, not what they call a baller now. I used to play football and I had the opportunity to play pro football. And instead of going to a football match, I decided I'm going to play my sound for the last time and I ended up in a fire. So from there, you can see my life started changing. I lost my closest people in that fire. My girlfriends, my close, all my sound friends, all my sound man friends, them who were like my brothers. Do you know what? That shattered my life. From that, I couldn't do the things that I wanted to do. I couldn't be the person that I wanted to. My mum had a nervous breakdown because now she's ended up with this disabled child that's been broken and can't walk. At that point, they were telling me, you will never, ever walk again. Can you imagine being 16 and being told you will never, ever walk again? At one point, they wanted to take my leg from my hip. And I was adamant, I'm not having it. You're not chopping off my leg. But it's no good to you. It's going to be no good. It won't work. It doesn't work. Don't care. You're not taking my, I'm not being a young black man with one leg walking around in England. That's not working.
So how is your leg now?
I still have problems with it. I still go to the hospital every week, once a week for it. I've got arthritis in both my hips, arthritis in both my knees, arthritis in both ankles and in both shoulders. I've got nerve damage in my neck and the base of my spine. At this point, I can feel my hands. I can't feel my fingertips. Don't feel my feet. This is just ongoing. My whole life has been ups, downs, ins, outs, in and out of the hospital. One operation for this, another operation for that. One operation works, another operation doesn't. I just had another operation last year to try and see if they could ease the nerve damage, and they just realized that you've probably broke your neck when you was in the fire because a couple of your bones are fused together. But obviously, back in 1981, we didn't have MRI machines and whatever not, and I was burnt. So my burns were the first point of call. You had to deal with that because that was what you could see. But I ended up in hospital for 6 months. I spent 4 months on a traction, right? I had weights coming out of my hip, weights pulling my leg down at the end of the bed, strings all over the place, pins through my knee, through my ankle. Do you know, I will tell you, I won't say I'm lucky. I will tell you that I am a God-blessed child because for what I went through, probably shouldn't be here. And that really is the truth. I've had my lungs pumped and I'm still here. After all that, I still went back. I studied. I worked. I was working for a local authority for many, many years until they medically retired me. When they medically retired me, I still got up and went and worked again. I'd done social work. I'd done youth work. And I've been a DJ all my life, right back to this day. I'm still doing community radio. I've been around legal radio. I still DJ out as a DJ. I still play in clubs and parties. Yeah, that's me. Do you know what? And now some of us have actually gotten together and we've formed the New Crossfire Foundation to leave a legacy for those that passed and for those of us that are still alive. And so that Britain can't just sweep it under the carpet again. It can't just be another black British tragedy that nobody knows about. 14 young black kids died. Now, at the time, they were saying it's a racist attack. I've stood up for many, 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 many years, and I've given many, many reasons why. I've been called all kinds of names by my own people, by other races, but I stand up and I talk the truth at all times, and I stand by what I say. The New Crossfire was not a racist attack. We've had some idiot, a Caucasian young man in prison, screaming and shouting it. Oh, I know who done it. We sat down on the roof watching the nigger burn. Yeah, right. Whatever. Never happened. But the fire started inside the house. I do know. I have a very good idea of how it started. Unfortunately, the police couldn't find out, not through the want of trying. And I will say, though the New Crossfire itself was not a racist attack, the things that transpired around it were the first set of police were very racist. The fact that you called for an inquest like 3 months after the fire, you hadn't even spoken to people yet. These are all racist things why you've done this, because you know you call an inquest 3 months after something like that. You've not gotten down to the root of it yet. There's so much that went on with the New Crossfire But do you know something? Out of the ashes rises the phoenix. And we at the New Crossfire Foundation are trying to be that phoenix. We want to be that beam of light, that beam of good and love that came out of a tragedy. We want our friends and family that passed and hurt, and we want them to be remembered. As a matter of fact, we don't even want them to be remembered. We need them to be remembered. Because unfortunately, in the late 70s and 80s, people of my generation, first generation UK black, we came along and we got caught up in, I don't know, I wouldn't call it a war, I'd call it a revolution. It was a time of change. It was a time of change that had to be fought for. We got caught up in the racism of those times. We got caught up in all the things that were bad, but we weren't bad. We were trying to find our way through. We were kids trying to live, trying to have fun, looking forward to a future. There's a lot of people out here. Though I'm the worst injured and probably the most seen, there are a lot of us here that went through this tragedy. And out of this tragedy, the black community of London got smashed because we were led to believe that, yeah, somebody threw a petrol bomb through a house where there was a black party going on. Because of all of these things, our community tried. We got up, we had the Black People's Day of Action March, which brought the most black people ever together in this country. And that was long before the Million Man March in America. And though the newspapers and the powers that be tell you, oh, there was about 5,000, no more than 10,000 people, I tell you what, we could have filled the Emirates. There wasn't 5,000, there wasn't 10,000, there wasn't 20,000. You keep going upwards of 30, 40, 50,000 black people that converged on London from all over the country, Birmingham, Manchester, Scotland. At that point, kids of my age, we didn't even know that black people existed in Scotland. We knew then they all came down. We created history, but we created history under a false pretense. We created history because everybody thought it was a racist attack. Don't get me wrong, you know, it doesn't lessen the burden, but I often wonder, would we have all come together like that if we had thought it was one of our own that had done it?
So do you think the New Crossfire influenced debates around racism in the UK?
Crossfire changed life for black people in the UK. From that point on, things started changing. From that point on, more people started fighting. From that point on, we began to get black leaders in this country. Out of the New Crossfire spawned all of the riots, 81, 83, 85. This is all spawned from the New Crossfire. This is why I say out of the ashes rises a phoenix. Because the New Crossfire, yes, 14 young black people died. They didn't die for nothing. Hence why I'm still here fighting for the cause, fighting to make sure that their names are remembered, fighting to make sure that the tragedy is remembered, fighting to make sure that it's in the history books of Britain. Things changed. Politicians started to sit up and listen. King Charles, who was then Prince Charles, started to come to the ghettos of England.
I remember actually that Johnny Osborne had a song, 13 Dead, Nothing Said, referring to the neglect by the then Queen Elizabeth II, because she didn't mention the tragedy at all.
I believe it was a week or 2 weeks after, or a few weeks after the fire. There was a fire in a disco in Ireland. The royal family jumped on their aeroplanes and flew to Ireland and went to the bedsides of the survivors and talked to them and spoke to them and how sorry we are. We got a letter, not even from the Queen, from Prince Charles, probably 10, 15 years later, saying how sorry you are. But none of you never came to my bedside. None of you never came to come and see my friends. None of you even bothered to write a letter of condolence at the time. Listen, we're here. And when I say we, I mean black people. Whether we're British, whether we're English, whether we're West Indian, African, wherever we come from, we're here. We built this country. Why hear people talking about world war and we went to war for you? You didn't go to war for me. You went to war because your government sent you to war. And then after your war, your government then invited people of my complexion to this country to come and rebuild it. And come we did, and killed is what we got. Murdered, racists, going at us. Growing up as a kid, bro, I lived in South London. I remember 14, 15 years old, the old Cortina pulling up, four or five white dudes jumping out and having to run for my life. I'm a kid. Listen, things have changed. The New Cross Fire brought a change. But here we are in 2024 and we've gone back a long, long way. We need people like you to expose the things that a generation of black people done before this generation came along, because they don't know our history. And if they knew, I truly believe that a lot of the kids that are out here carrying on stupid, killing people and getting killed would actually put their head in a different space.
So what message would you like to share with people who are not familiar with the New Cross Fire?
I would like to say life is for living, but the only way that everybody's going to live and live well is if we all start having conversations. We all, black, white, pink, brown, young, old, we all need to start talking. We cannot wait for the governments of the world, of this country or any other country. We, the people, we need to start talking. The world needs a revolution, and I don't mean a war. We need to revolutionize the way we think and deal with each other as humans. I do a lot of research, historical and factual. And do you know what? We go forward, we stagnate, and then we go backward. And then we go forwards, and then we stagnate, and then we go backward. How long is it going to take for us to wake up and realize that, oh, do you know what? The hands of a few hold the power, and it's because they've stirred the pot and left the rest of us in confusion. And that confusion is what creates the chaos that we live in. If I had one thing to say, it really would be, lest we forget. Never forget your past. Never forget where you came from, because it's the only way that you can make a future to go forward.
So, Wayne, how can people contact you?
You can look up the NCFF, the New Cross Fire Foundation, Wayne Haynes at ncff.co.uk. The NCFF is the place to catch me. At the moment, our website's down. It will be back up next month. We are in the process of revamping it and everything else. And once you get a chance, take a look. We want to try and bring our history into the schools.
Wayne Haynes, survivor of the New Cross Fire 1981 and director of the New Cross Fire Foundation. Thank you very much for your time. Please join me, author Nigel Beckles, for Interesting Conversations with Interesting People, featuring interviews with award-winning authors, relationship and life coaches, therapists, and a wide variety of people with intriguing stories to share. Interesting Conversations with Interesting People.
Please follow author Nigel Beckles' podcasts on Amazon Audible, Spotify, and all major podcasting platforms. Thanks.